Well, thank you all so much for being here today. I'm very excited to talk to you about this topic that I feel very passionately about. So Michelle is actually one of the co-authors on this project, as well as Charles Branis. So I have no disclosures. So I'm going to talk about four things. The first thing is just the health risks of vacant land, just to go over that, and then talk about a really interesting treatment for vacant land, a greening treatment, and some of the health benefits that we've found from that treatment. And then I'm going to talk about some of the methodologic challenges of conducting neighborhood structural change research, and then talk about some of the benefits of community, municipal, and academic partnerships that are very necessary to get this kind of work done. So vacant lots are a big problem in a lot of cities across the country, particularly in the Northeast and across the Rust Belt. They're parcels of land that are abandoned. They're often overgrown with weeds, vegetation, and they're often filled with trash. Anything from abandoned cars, mattresses, refrigerators, and then just the trash that people throw on the ground every day. When you look at what's found in these lots, there's often evidence of illegal activity, so needles indicating drug use in these places, condoms, so perhaps some prostitution, and people also use these places to hide illegal guns. So if you have a gun and you don't want to have it on your person, you might hide it in, say, the corner of this lot and think that no one's going to be able to find it there, and then when you want to use your gun, you might go to that place and get your gun, and these areas become nodes of crime. So abandoned homes as well. This is just a representative picture. You can see this home on the right here looks like it's being lived in. There's windows, there's an air conditioning unit, there's chairs on the porch, sitting right next to a home that is clearly abandoned with blown out windows, boarded up door, and some police tape. So in Philadelphia, where I live, there are over 40,000 vacant lots. I was astonished when I learned that number. I said there surely must be a decimal point error there, but no, there's over 40,000 vacant parcels of land, and that doesn't include all the abandoned buildings. This white area here is downtown Center City, Philadelphia, and you can see there's not a lot of vacant properties there. However, in West Philadelphia, North Philadelphia, and South Philadelphia, there's a very high proportion of vacant lots. In Philadelphia, the city owns about a quarter of those properties, and the other 75% of those properties are owned by delinquent landowners. Often the city doesn't know who owns them, or the person who on record owns them has died. So even though the city only owns a quarter of the properties, they own 100% of the problems that come with these vacant lots. A lot is talked about the economic impact. That's a lot of what the city cares about. It costs money to put out fires that happen on these properties. It costs money to maintain and board up some of the abandoned buildings. And then there's lost tax revenue because no one is taking ownership of those properties. And why did this happen? How did Philadelphia develop these 40,000 vacant lots? In large part, it has to do with population decline. So in 1950, Philadelphia had a peak population of over 2 million people. In 2000, that was down to about 1.5 million people. All of those people left Philadelphia in part because in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, there was a loss of about 50% of manufacturing jobs that were in the city. And so when you lose jobs, you're going to lose some of your population. The good news is that in the 2010 census, the population actually rose for the first time in five decades. So we're really interested in the health impact of this vacant land, these vacant lots, abandoned buildings. This was a study that we conducted. My last name at that time was Garvin. This was a study we conducted, a qualitative study, where we interviewed 29 people and conducted 50 interviews. We interviewed some people twice. And really wanted to know, what do people living in high vacancy areas, how do they feel that that affects their health? And this is what we found. There were three main health domains. The biggest one actually was not the health of them as individuals, but the health of their communities, and so community well-being. People felt that when you lived on a block with even one vacant lot or one abandoned house, that it overshadowed all the positive things that were happening on your block. and that all people really saw and felt was that vacancy. It fractured, because of that, it fractured ties between neighbors when some people would blame other people for vacancy. It also created a financial strain. We do know that if you live next to a vacant lot or an abandoned home, that your property value goes down. People were also concerned with crime. And then people talked about the physical and mental health impacts. So injury, a lot of times kids would go out and play on these areas and could get hurt. And then there was a trash buildup, as I talked about, and that attracted rodents. And so people felt that rodents were on their property and their homes because of these vacant lots. And then mental health, the negative emotions, feeling depressed or anxious because of what was happening on their street, and then feeling a stigma attached to living in an area that had a lot of vacant lots or abandoned buildings and being afraid of crime. This is one representative quote of one of the people in that study. They said, "It makes me feel not important. Like I think that your surroundings, like your environment, vacant land, affects your mood. It affects your train of thought, your thought process, your emotions. And seeing vacant lots and abandoned buildings, to me, that's a sign of neglect. So I feel neglected." So now I want to talk about something very positive, this greening intervention, which is a place-based intervention or a neighborhood structural change to these vacant lots. So the Pennsylvania Horticulture Society was our partner in this, and they are the oldest horticulture society in the country based in Philadelphia, and they, for the last 12 to 13 years, have been doing what's called Philadelphia Land Care, where they perform this greening intervention on thousands of vacant lots across the city. First, they remove all the trash and the weeds. They do earthwork and seeding, so they plant new grass. They put up a simple wooden post and rail fence around the perimeter, although there are openings on either side so people can enter it, the space, and then they plant trees. The space is not meant in particular to be really a park space. There are no benches, there are no playground equipment, but people can and do use the space. So these are a couple of representative pictures of before greening and after greening, and you can see that it's a pretty striking visual change. And another before and after picture. So this study was conducted by Charles Brandis, not myself, but in this study they looked at the last 10 years of vacant lot greening in the city. And it was a quasi-experimental study, so they compared about 4,000 or so lots that had been greened to similar lots that would have been eligible for greening but had not been greened. And the most significant thing they found was a decrease in gun crimes around all of the lots that had been greened compared to lots that had not been greened. And again, one potential reason for this could be because people use these vacant lots to hide guns. And so if you lose your place to hide your gun, then you're going to have a dropping crime in that, in gun crime in particular in that area. They also found a decrease in vandalism, decrease in self-reported stress, an increase in self-reported exercise in certain sections of the city. So what we then did was a study, a prospective study, a randomized controlled trial of vacant lot greening. This was a pilot study, so we had two sites. We randomized vacant lots in one section of the city to either receive the greening treatment or to serve as a control and receive no treatment. We had two vacant lots in the greening site and two vacant lots in the control site. We then interviewed people that lived in the surrounding block or two around the vacant lots that were in the study, and we did a survey, and then we did a walking trial with them. So as far as the survey, people that lived around the lots that had been greened reported feeling significantly safer after greening compared to those living around the control lots. And this is important because actual crime numbers, of course, matter, but how people feel where they live is very important and has implications on their health, whether they're going to go outside, whether they're going to let their children go outside, whether they're feeling stress in their lives. And then we did look at actual crime numbers, although it did not have a high enough N of vacant lots to have significant results, but we did show a non-significant decrease in total crimes and gun assaults. And then the final piece of this was a walking trial. So we walked people in the same walk around the control site and the greening site. And the walk was around their neighborhood. It took them past the vacant lots that were in the study and took them past other vacant lots that were in the neighborhood but not in the study. And we monitored their heart rate continuously as they were going on this walk. The reason we monitored heart rate, we're using that as a marker for stress. And we theorized that there are things in the environment that cause acute stress, acute on chronic stress, and that have downstream implications on cardiovascular health. So we use heart rate as a marker of stress, and thinking that these vacant lots and abandoned buildings can be very stressful to people as they're walking around in their neighborhoods. And we did find that when in view of a green vacant lot, so we distinguished between when you could actually see the vacant lot versus not being able to see it. So when you were in view of a green vacant lot, your heart rate was significantly decreased compared to when you were in view of a control lot or a lot that hadn't been greened even at the greening site. So moving on then to some of the challenges of doing this type of research. So there are logistic and legal challenges to making changes in the built environment and trying to study that. For example, some of the legal challenges, we performed an intervention on land. Some of those vacant lots were owned by the city, and those were easy to get permission from the city. But some of them, as I said, are owned by individuals who are MIA. And so we had to have a method in place for being able to legally perform an intervention on those properties. And then in addition, when you're doing field research, when you're monitoring someone's heart rate or monitoring other responses to your interventions in the field, you have to distinguish between signal and noise. So what changes are you seeing is actually from your intervention versus other things happening in the environment? One way or one structure to think about which of these place-based programs warrant research investment is this structure kind of laid out in a paper also by Charlie Branis. So thinking about making basic structural changes, so things that are going to be simple and relatively inexpensive. You want your intervention to be scalable to large populations. So is this something that can easily be reproduced in other cities, other towns? And then sustainable over time. So after the initial investment is done, is the impact going to continue? Briefly, these were our partners, community, municipal, and academic. And in the interest of time, just move on to this last slide here. These partnerships are crucial, and as you all know, in conducting this type of research, we could not have done this type of work in the community and making these kind of changes without these partnerships. But they have their challenges. There are overlapping interests, but also some competing interests. There are varying timelines, so the academic timeline can be very different from the timeline that people in the city government have. And then there are sometimes questions of who benefits from these interventions. So one of the things we ran into was a concern in doing a randomized control trial that the people who are randomized to the controlled group are not getting an intervention that we know could potentially be helpful. And so it takes a lot of time to explain the science to non-scientists and explain why this type of trial is important. And you can also do things like secure funding to provide the intervention to the control group that didn't get it after the study is actually over. So in conclusion, vacant lot greening may be a cost-effective and simple intervention that can mitigate some of the negative health risks associated with vacant land. And neighborhood structural change research poses unique challenges, but I would say is vital to the advancement of public health. And I just want to, in addition to my co-authors, Michelle and Charlie, want to also thank other collaborators, Bob Grossman and Keith Green at the Pennsylvania Horticulture Society, Rose Cheney, another researcher at Penn, and Carolyn Canusio. Thank you.